It's time for Spotlight on KRWC. It is our first Wednesday of the month of April, and that means that we have in studio with us Emily Hansen, University of Minnesota Extension horticulturalist, and Julie Pink is back in with us again for the month of April, and we want to welcome both ladies to the studios. Emily, nice to see you again.
Yeah, nice to always. See you too.
We were chatting in the pre-time before the program here that we waited all the way till it wasn't winter anymore to get some winter.
Exactly.
That was kind of weird.
And we were just talking about how in years past that it's dumped snow on us late in April. I remember when I was in high school playing softball, we had like a foot of snow on April 20th and we had to go out there and shovel the fields off and we had a game the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we've crazy weather here in Minnesota.
Not this year though.
Yep, not this year. We're not jinxing it.
No. Well, we welcome you back, as always. We are chatting a little bit. You want to catch up on spring days? You had a real... You squeezed that right in there in between the snows.
Yep, we had a great spring days turnout.
That was last Saturday?
Two Saturdays ago. Okay. So March 23rd, mm-hmm. I believe it was. That's right. Saturday in between the Thursday snow and the Sunday snow.
There you go, yeah.
But we had a great turnout. About 150 people showed up to Maple Lake to learn about various different topics. We had a topic on edible landscapes, some lawn care and soil health breakout sessions, and then also new plants to see for the year. So we're already in the works of planning next year's spring days. So
that's a good event. And you said pretty good vendors and people interested in that. And you always have, as you say, those breakout sessions can be interesting too.
Yep, we have a keynote speaker, three different breakout sessions. We provide lunch for people that sign up, and then we have various vendors and a silent auction. So it's quite the day. Very packed.
Door prizes and breakfast,
and, too. And door prizes and breakfast, yeah. I forgot all of those amenities, too.
We got it all.
You'll be renting rooms there before you know it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yep. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, right.
Get some out-of-towners.
Yeah.
And do you draw from, is it mainly Wright County area folks? Or
yeah, what? Mainly yeah. Wright County. We usually get some people from the cities, like in Hennepin County, some Stearns County folks, but mainly Wright County and Hennepin County.
Yeah, good. All right, so what are we looking at here for April? We got to start thinking about our lawns, I suppose.
Yeah.
Lawns and flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Once they reappear, anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm. I know. I've seen some spots across the county that are turning green already, and I've been getting a lot of seeding questions at the office. But I just wanted to start off with going over what the plant growth cycle looks like in lawns. So in the spring, those roots are full of all of the nutrients that have been stored from the fall. And the shoots, which are like the green parts of the grass or the parts that are visible from the ground, use that stored energy from the fall for new growth in the spring. And when we get to the summer and we get to those warm temperatures, that leaf and root growth slows down. So we have cool season grasses in Minnesota. And so they rest during times of heat and stress. So sometimes your grass, you know, even though it's brown, doesn't mean it's necessarily dead. It's just resting, right? And this was an interesting statistic that I didn't know of before, but roots are damaged when the soil temperatures are above 85 degrees Fahrenheit. So even though right now, you know, it could be 60 outside, that doesn't mean the soil temperature is 60, right? So it's a good distinction there in the summer. So even though it's 100 outside, we're not necessarily sure what the soil temperature is unless you measure it. And now, then
that would be pretty rare, I would think. And if you've got any shade at all, that, you know.
Yeah, you know, some people, their lawns can get cooked, but it is very rare to get the soil temperature that high. But if you have really high soil temperatures for an extended period of time, that's when you start seeing the root decay or loss of life due to drought, I guess I would say. But when you get back into the fall, The shoots start to grow again, and the nutrients are being stored for winter to grow those long roots. And the shoot growth is really optimized when the air temperatures are 55 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit. So that was another interesting statistic, too. Sometimes I don't remember all these numbers, right? So it's cool to see what the temperatures are. But in terms of seeding, types of seeding questions I've gotten, a lot of people are looking for grasses that are a little bit more tolerant to the conditions that we're seeing. And for that, I would recommend fine fescues. Fine fescues are way more tolerant to drought. Sometimes they're really good in the shade. Root competition between trees. A lot of times I get calls from people that have a lot of trees in their yard, beautiful big oak trees, but their grass stand is so bare because there's too much shade and there's too much competition between those plants. So fine fescues are a really good choice for that. And there's different mixes too. I won't go into all of that, but there is more information on that at the extension site. And the best time to seed your grass is in the fall, but you can also seed it in the spring around this time in April and May. And we did get a question from someone if you can put down a weed killer right now. And I'm not sure what type of weed killer this is talking about, but crabgrass pre-emergent is usually applied now to mid-May. And then the post-emergent, obviously, after that crabgrass comes up. So if you're looking at applying a crabgrass pre-emergent right now, that's what I would look into. But if you're interested in learning more about the mixes of the fine fescues, you can always give me a call at the office, and I can get those numbers for you, too.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Good to hear about. It's just nice to be able to talk about the fact that we're getting into lawn care season. So.
Mm-hmm.
Julie, what do you got for us today?
Well, just some tidbits, I'd say, different topics. There's certain things that you shouldn't rush to do. For example, raking a lot. We really, I hope people will consider the pollinators. Pollinators provide a third of our plants depend on pollinators. And there's been a dramatic decrease in them. So consider perhaps going more native plants when you start shopping. We can start looking and ordering catalogs at this time of year, or seeds even. Also consider not treating your whole lawn, because you kill some good insects as well, but spot spraying your weeds or hand picking even your weeds versus, you know, put a kill all on. One site said wait till the temperature is 50 degrees to soil temperatures 50 degrees to apply any mm-hmm. weed killers. Also, be slow to mow. There's been the no mow May, and there's been some controversy over that, whether that's necessary or not. But if you can leave even your, you know, some of the leaves on a little bit longer, a lot of our pollinators are living in leaf debris, so that will help. Also consider not mulching everything. It actually prevents the soil from warming if you put it on too soon. And when you mulch, if you can leave some bare spots, because we have a great number of ground nesting bees that need those bare spots. If you're cutting down perennials, as we all get anxious to do, I'm one of those that gets anxious to do that, leave at least 18 inches, because again, the pollinators, the insects live in those stems. So if you can leave for a while 18 inches, you are helping the pollinators.
That's an interesting point, because I think a lot of time, myself included, you always think of any of these species have to be on the external side of things, but actually it's
no,
not,
they're inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. the other thing about leaving some mulch, like I have leaves on all my gardens, leaving a little bit longer is if we do have a freeze or frost, that could protect what's coming up. I know I have some tulips coming up, and I'm just going to leave them around, you know. Until you start to see the plants are yellowing, you know, that happens end of April, May, then I move the leaves.
I was wondering about tulips, that now that you mentioned it, because I was seeing, now these are some kind of within the city plantings. We were at the Children's Museum not long ago, and they had some tulips that were pretty much, and they weren't open, but they sure were coming up. But then after that, it got snowed on. Are they okay? Or
it's hard to say. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say how what stage of that. Mine look okay, the ones that did get snowed on. But there are some leaves there,
They're
too.
They're pretty tough.
Yeah.
I mean, all plants are tough, right? So, like, even though the trees were starting to bloom this year, they probably got winter kill and die back. They'll probably still have to bloom, you know, again to set their buds out. So I guess we'll see what happens with the tulips. Yeah. A lot of people have had some stuff coming
see.
Up.
Mm-hmm.
Many times the plants are smarter than we are.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah.
Some of them can be. I've seen pictures of them in the snow. So just depends.
Yeah.
It depends more on the temperature, I think.
I didn't mean to get off topic.
No, it's a great question. I'm glad you brought it up. Everybody should stop pruning by April 1st. That should have been done. Trees, especially. Because now they're vulnerable to oak wilt, etc. Let's see what else we have. It is something you can do now. It's a good time to start. If you're going to start tomatoes from seeds, it's a good time. Or your annuals, such as marigolds, dianthus, you know, sweet alyssum, salvia, that kind of thing. An idea I got from our spring days, I believe. Something you can do is laminate your seed packets. If you have I happen to have a little laminator or something. Anyways, and you can attach those to wood stakes so you can keep track. I find it hard to keep track of what I've sown elsewhere.
And they're colorful too. So
yeah.
You know what's there.
And they'll tell you what it's supposed to look like when it comes up. And I thought that was a great idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Another idea was if you use metal stakes that you label. To put a label on the kind of the underside as well, the backside, because it doesn't get as much sun. Mm-hmm. They do fade sometimes.
Yeah.
I like that idea too. If you're looking for something to do besides, you know, planting, survey for winter damage. If you see yews or evergreens that are dead on, you know, and you're sure they're dead, then you can prune them a little bit. But if there's some life on them, leave them at least another month, because sometimes the buds will grow, the dead needles will fall off, and it'll rejuvenate. So don't be in a rush to trim the dead stuff, is what I'm saying. And then once you trim your evergreens, you should fertilize and mulch and that kind of thing. It's a good time to sharpen and clean tools. And when the ground is thawed enough, it's also a good time to do a soil test so you can see what you need.
Does that soil, is it possible that those soils change from time to time?
Well, like the composition of the soil won't really change very much, but like the level of nutrients can. Like nitrogen, it flows through the soil super easily, so it's hard to measure that, so you won't get nitrogen in your soil test. Phosphorus, it's really hard to get out of the soil, but if you stop applying phosphorus over a number of years, you could retest again and see where your levels are at. Potassium is about the same too. So like the composition itself won't necessarily change, but the levels of each nutrient ebb and flow, I would say, is the easy way of explaining that.
Well, I was just wondering, you know, about it, some people are really, you know, very, very adamant about aeration, for instance. And I'm just wondering if, you know, if over time, if when you aerate, can that change help to change the make it? I know it breaks up the soil or helps to make it looser.
Mm-hmm. I don't think aerating will change the soil composition over time at all.
You'd have to add, you almost have to,
really whatever nutrient that you have. And like our soils have been around for thousands of years and they haven't necessarily changed like the composition themselves, mm-hmm. but just what we apply to them and the level of nutrients in the soils changes.
Yeah.
If you have a raised garden and you're growing the same vegetables in it year after year, you may be depleting mm-hmm. some of the, so you may need to add more compost or something like that.
Yeah, a raised garden bed is definitely different too, because it's not from the earth, I guess I would say. Usually when you're doing a raised bed, you're getting bagged soil. So checking to see those levels too would be a good thing. I know I've gotten a few calls about some people in the summer having raised beds using bagged soil and then their tomatoes got yellow shoulders or they got like calcified. And it's not necessarily due to a calcium deficiency. It could be other deficiencies in the soil, but still a good idea to get it tested to see if there's anything that you need to keep applying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are on our regular spotlight here once a month with Emily Hansen and today Julie Pink also with us. Master Gardener, and Emily, of course, with the U of M Extension. You wanted to touch on some pollinator plants before we go here, too?
Yeah, so I think we've discussed this before, but our climate is changing, right? So we're going to have longer, more severe droughts, increased flooding, and higher year-round temperatures is what the models are predicting. And if you don't know this, the plant hardiness zones have changed in Minnesota. In Wright County, we're still in Zone 4. Zone 5 has entered Minnesota in the southern part of the state, and I don't know where the boundary is in Hennepin County, but Hennepin County is Zone 5 too. And I don't know where that reaches towards Wright County, but I know it is creeping towards like the Watertown area in Carver County. So those are on the USDA website if you wanted to look those up, but Wright County is mainly Zone 4. And I have just some names of some plants if you're looking at buying some plants that are for the pollinators that are a little bit resistant to our climate changing, so you can be prepared for these climate events in the future. And just some names of some flood-tolerant pollinator plants. The first one is Golden Alexander. Second one is Blue Lobelia. We also have some trees and shrubs. Pussy willow. I really like pussy willows. There's a pussy willow in Buffalo where the construction is now. Really nice shrub. Box elders and American basswoods are some names. And this is a really long list too. So if you're interested in more types of plants that you want to buy this year, you can always reach out. There's also drought-tolerant pollinator plants that are ready for climate change. Golden Alexander is also on this list. Little Bluestem is a common native plant in Minnesota that a lot of people plant. It's a good drought-tolerant plant. Purple Prairie Clover, and then some trees and shrubs, Choke Cherry, Service Berries, and Currants and Gooseberries. I know a lot of people that grow those. And finally, some pollinator plants for heat tolerance in the future. Pale purple coneflower, sycamore tree, Ohio buckeye, and chinquapin oak trees. And like I said, this is a really long list, so if you're interested in learning more about these different types of plants and what else you can buy that are native, or some of these are not native but they're present, you can also reach out to me again.
In general, the change in the hardiness zone, and I was going to ask you about that because I think I did read that just the other day, but the changes in hardiness, summarize that for us. It basically boils down to you might be able to grow and keep things that we never were able to before.
Yeah, exactly. So the plant hardiness zones aren't based on climate change. They're based on 30-year weather models. So just looking at the temperatures from year to year, in each month, that's what they base it off instead of what the climate prediction models are. So you could plant a zone 5 plant in a zone 5 area. So we're getting into like more of the southern types of plants, like bald cypress is actually a recommended tree on our climate ready list. And that's a tree that's really commonly grown in Florida, like in the swamp, marshy areas. The roots are kind of hanging over in the swamp. And that's actually recommended in Minnesota now. So there's some interesting ones to try. If you're experimenting, I would say go right ahead. There are some people that are trying to grow peach trees. Peach trees may not be super successful. I know some people that have been very successful with it and keeping them warm in like a high tunnel format. But other people, you know, they plant it outside. They get a big crop of peaches in 1 year, and then the next year it succumbs to the winter injury. So. Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah, there it's a lot of variability, but doesn't hurt to try.
Yeah, I can remember when even, you know, in the last decades, even when certain types of hydrangeas were even kind of like, oh, you don't dare right. plant those. And now, I mean, you can plant just about any of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of interesting. Try and experiment and just make sure that when you are going to buy a plant that you're looking at the tag. Because some plants, they're annuals in Minnesota because it's zone 4, but they're perennials in a zone 6, right? So just making that distinction, knowing what zone you're in, and reading the tag is really important to know what you're buying.
Will there be, do you expect that there will be some kind of hybrids with some of those types of plants that are, you know, that can bloom twice a year? I mean, will they figure out a way to for us northerners to enjoy it for more often?
That's interesting. I'm not sure. I'm not
your inner scientist out
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I'm not a part of the nursery industry, but I'm sure that they're already experimenting and doing stuff with that, especially with the climate models and where they're going. I think they always want to get something out there that's new and fun and creative, so I'm sure they're trying something like that.
And another great source of information is the Minnesota Extension, UMN. You know, it's just
the website.
Go on the website. There's also, I'm not supposed to recommend special, but anyways, and they will recommend, if you're looking for native plants too, they'll recommend good sources for those.
Mm-hmm.
Good. A couple events before we go here.
Yep, we still have our maple syrup workshop that's open. I feel like I've been advertising this for 4 months now, and we went in and out of maple syrup season, but that's still open for registration on Saturday, April 13th in Waverly. And then our McLeod County Master Gardeners are having their Spring Days event called Garden Magic on Tuesday, April 23rd in Hutchinson. This will be a night event. We'll talk about container gardening and different types of plants, perennial plants that provide color throughout the seasons. And if you need more information about any of these events or resources about information we talked about today, you can call me, Emily Hansen, at 612-394-6302.
Anything else we should know about Emerald Ash Borer? I know you had the thing in January there, but where are we at as we enter springtime here?
Good question. May, April, May, mid-April, May, month of May is a good time to treat trees. So treating trees is a good idea if you're within 15 miles of a known infestation. Wright County, it's pretty common that there will be an infestation within 15 miles of you. The treatment that would be best is called emamectin benzate. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but it's a tree injection. And most of the time you need a certified arborist to treat that product because it is a licensed chemical.
And that's a preventative, or does it get the ones that are there?
Yeah, it is a preventative. I don't know if it's curative.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 50% loss, 50% or loss or less, I should say, I think it could be used as a curative. But if you have 50% or more, like higher levels of defoliation, then you wouldn't be a candidate for treatment, if that makes sense. Kind of botched that up.
Yeah, it's a rough topic because, of course, ash trees have been such a staple in Minnesota for forever. And
people love their ash trees in Minnesota, sure. And they provide a lot of benefits. So you can treat, but there's also new climate-ready trees that you can put into.
Very good. Okay, we're out of time. We appreciate you coming in. Julie, thank you. And Emily, always nice to talk to you.
Yep.
We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
So long. There is today's Spotlight on KRWC.